Please the court. My name is Brandon Hall. I represent the appellant, Max Pizza. I'll ask for 9 minutes and reserve, I guess that would be 6 minutes for rebuttal.
I'll try to remind you it's 6 minutes if you wish.
I see. If I just pay attention, I'm in charge.
If you, precisely.
Okay, thank you. Let me just very briefly set the procedural table, if I may, of the context of this case, because I think it's important. The core of the dispute was really two things, both at the trial level and at the last time when these parties were before this court. One was the interpretation of a commercial lease. Ultimately, the court in the first appeal made a ruling on that, so that issue is established. The second part was whether or not, based on the interpretation of the lease, the landlord had overcharged my client. The case was initially heard by way of a bench trial in June of 2007. In that trial, the court awarded my client a verdict in the amount of $14,189. Particularly important was the fact that about 2 weeks after the bench trial, the court issued a very specific findings of fact and conclusions of law. There are really only two findings of fact that I think are important for purposes of this court on appeal. The first was that the trial court found that the defendant, the appellee, had not provided the books and records which were necessary for my client to conduct a meaningful audit. The lease itself had a provision that allowed my client to go in and have an audit of the books. The second part, and I don't need to get into the factual detail of that, but that was the conclusion of the court. The second component was, because of the landlord's repeated failure to allow or provide all of the books and records, like general ledgers, the court determined that my client is entitled to an adverse inference, that had they produced those records, it would have shown that, in fact, they were overcharged on the lease. The adverse inference effectively works as a burden of proof shifting mechanism. This court, in its decision on appeal on December of 2008, ultimately ruled that the landlord was entitled to pass through to the plaintiff all costs related to the management and operation of the shopping center, not every single cost that they ever incurred. So the three main points that we are raising in this appeal are essentially this. First, we don't believe that the trial court record on remand, there's a court order on remand, dated April 21, 2009, it does not support a finding that, basically, it's an insufficient factual finding to support the conclusion that the court rendered. If you look at the court's order, what it says is, I find these costs to be reasonable. Twice the court used the term reasonable. I think the trial court missed the mark. The question is not whether the costs are reasonable. The question is whether the costs are related to the management and operation of the shopping center.
Is that the same as being a common area expense, or is it broader?
It's broader. I think that the trial court, that was one of the arguments, the primary argument we made, that there's a distinction between CAM charges and all costs. This court ultimately determined that it, in fact, includes all costs. However, it's not every, and maybe a little discussion might help the court about what this property is like. All right, we're talking about retail tenant space. There's an office building there too, and in that office building, there are other tenants doing other kinds of things, as opposed to just your like my client was a pizza shop. Okay, and under the lease, which was pretty much the same with all the other tenants, the landlord, there were some tenants for which the landlord would pay costs that were internal to them, like utilities, some HVAC charges, and other things that should not then be spread to all the other tenants. So there's a point of distinction that needs to be made by way of the landlord, and then, of course, by way of the trial court to make some distinction between not just all costs, because the landlord is going to incur some costs, but some of those costs are going to get sent back to a few of the other tenants. That's one of the distinctions that was lacking in the court's April 21, 2009 order. The other thing is that there was also a theater, right? And it was our position, and I think this is where the trial court failed to make the distinction, that those expenses internal to the theater should also not be imposed upon all tenants. And I think the trial court record is insufficient to show that it made that distinction. The trial court may not have known it even make that distinction. Clearly, by saying these costs are reasonable, that there seemed to be a misunderstanding of what's required by the trial court under the lease. And in general, I think under the Mission Viejo court, which was cited by the Court of Appeal in its decision, basically the record has got to be sufficiently explicit to give the Court of Appeal, and of course the appellants and the parties, a reasonable basis so they can evaluate whether the trial court did its job, basically.
So just so I'm clear on this point, the trial court found that all costs were reasonable.
Yes.
If the court had done it correctly, it would have found that costs were in plug-in for me the applicable standard that you think the court should have used.
Okay, I think the trial court should have, assuming it did the analysis, should have determined that these costs were directly related to the management and operating costs of the shopping center. That's the distinction that needs to be made that was not made.
In that regard, your primary concerns are HVAC and utility expenses for the office building?
That's part of it. And some HVAC charges, maybe some utilities and other charges that some, I'm talking about internal costs that may have been internal to possibly the office building or other tenants. All right. It's that lack of distinction that I think actually bred a lot of the suspicion over a number of years that it was not being done. When you can put that on top of the right to do an audit, and then from our perspective, here's a bunch of records, you go figure it out, it lends a lot of doubt. Yes.
Now, was this argument made to the trial court on remand?
Yes, it was.
Okay.
We briefed it. So, short little argument, we briefed it.
Okay, so my question then is, why can't we fairly understand the word reasonable within the meaning of the trial court's order to mean directly related to the management and operating of the shopping center?
Because I think you're guessing. I mean, quite honestly, what does that word mean? I mean, it could mean the judge didn't understand the distinction, did not make that distinction. Maybe it's a poor use of word, and the trial court did think that. I suppose the Court of Appeal could do that, but I think that there's a line to be drawn there, and I think that the record doesn't show that that's in fact what happened.
Okay, I mean, just you see my question, because if that's the debate, if that's really the argument that's before the trial court, it's this or that. Maybe you know, it's either yes, associated with the directly related to the management operating the shopping center, or it's not. I wonder if the word reasonable just could be understood in light of those arguments.
Yeah. I don't think that's what the court did. It is possible. I think that's guesswork, quite candidly. But I think that it was pretty clear in the arguments that we were making in my being involved in the trial that, and the court's first ruling, that he didn't do, that's not in fact what the trial court did.
Okay.
Are there specific amounts for utilities and HVAC charged to the office building that shown in the record? And if we look at those, the numbers the trial court came up with on remand are just irreconcilable?
I don't know, and I don't think so. That has been the fundamental problem. The reason why the audit provision was so important to my client was to verify that. It is our position, and it was the original finding of the trial court, that audit provision was not meaningfully complied with when we were provided large quantities of documents, unorganized and unreconciled, and in fact, a bunch of receipts don't matter unless you have general ledgers in order to compare them with.
Well, did you establish that the tenant kept general ledgers in the sense that you're describing them, or is it possible that the landlord's records were just as much of a mess as when they were shown to your client?
No, I believe that the testimony established at trial showed that the landlord was using a program called QuickBooks. You may be familiar with that program. It is a fairly comprehensive. It shows it gives you general ledgers, and they refused to provide all of the QuickBooks. There were some receipts that were generated, I believe, from that program, but it was piecemeal, and so we couldn't see the whole picture, and that was the trouble with the audit.
Trial court order the landlord to provide the GL screen from QuickBooks?
There was a motion to compel, which was granted. The motion to compel required them to produce records. The records we got and the audit process, a CPA, they really couldn't do an audit because they were missing pieces of it. The trial court found that process was inadequate. Again, this goes back to why the court found an adverse inference. It was inadequate. Let me back up. You asked the Court of Appeal did, excuse me, the trial court did grant a motion to compel. We got records from that. That was inadequate.
Okay, and I promised
that this one, the trial then flushed that out.
And I promised to warn you when you were into six yes. minutes and you're down to four, and I apologize.
That's fine. I'll hit the last 2 points, and whatever time I have left, I have left, if that's all right with your honors. So the court, after the trial, gives an adverse inference, all right? Without any reason, without any citation of the evidentiary basis in the record, just says, no, okay, you know, I'm not going to do that now. I'm going to change my mind, all right? It feels capricious. I'm not suggesting that it was, but it's like just in order for appellants and the Court of Appeals to evaluate whether to appeal, what to do with it, I think there's a minimal amount of specificity that is required, and I think that on the adverse inference, that was lacking as well. The final decision that I'd like the court, or the final issue I'd like the court to address, and that is this. In its mandate of December of 2008, the court held that the change in percentages, okay, should go back to 1997 only. And I'd like to just point out two things in the court record, and that is this. Trial exhibit number 4 and 5. These are letters from the landlord. 1996, this is before 1997. Court of Appeals decision said that we go from 1990, we only go back as far as 1997. And then the Court of Appeals decision said, and there's nothing in the record to suggest that in fact the cinema was included. I have two letters where they say, regarding the maintenance area around the cinema, this is a 1996 letter from the landlord, I find no language in the lease excluding this area, which means they included it. Same thing with trial exhibit number 5. It is explicit there. I'm just pointing out to the court that was in the record. I also raised that issue on remand with the trial court, hoping that we would have another factual finding so that we could have it addressed here, and it was ignored.
Counsel, I'm sensitive on this point, because I think you might be right. In fact, my question is, because you didn't file for a petition for rehearing or seek cert from the prior appeal, why aren't we stuck with that decision?
Well, first of all, I don't think we're stuck by way of any particular procedural rule that I'm aware of. Remember, the Court of Appeals decision, which was, you know, I think did a very good job, given everything that it had, reversing, remanding. It was a fairly complicated issue, all right? And one, the rules don't require you to file a petition for rehearing in order to do cert. Second of all, at some level, you want these appeals to be done, not piecemeal. It was our belief that the trial court, since this is a factual question, could have addressed it, which we addressed it, and then it did not again. So it's back up here. And, you know, I don't think the rules require it. Two, we're going to be back here on little pieces of this appeal, this piece, that piece. I think it's better by way of judicial economy, since it isn't contrary to any rules that I'm aware of, to do it all at one time, especially when you're talking about a factual question. I'll reserve whatever I have left. Thank you, Your Honors.
Good afternoon, Theodore Brin. I represent the landlord in this case, this time the appellee, Parker Crossroads Shopping Center, LLC. There are two factual parts of this case that were at issue in the prior appeal and are again apparently at issue here. In fact, if you go back and you look at the trial exhibits, you will see that these same exact arguments have been raised by the tenant for the last 11 years. If you look at Exhibit D and Exhibit C, you will see these same arguments made way back then before the case started in 2001. But the two factual things that I want to make sure the court understands are as follows. First of all, the text in question about the pass-through expenses in this lease is much more broad and much more all-encompassing than in your standard commercial lease. Most commercial leases do, in fact, refer to common area maintenance expenses. And it basically says that the landlord gets to pass through to the tenant all the common area maintenance expenses plus a pro rata share of taxes and insurance. Pretty standard form of lease. This lease is different. Paragraph 8, and this is what our prior appeal was about. We made this argument, we lost at the trial level, and then we brought it here. This lease says that the landlord can charge the tenants their pro rata share of all expenses related to the operation and management of the shopping center.
Well, under your view, would that include HVAC and utilities for the office building?
Absolutely.
Why?
Because the office building, and that brings me to the second factual part of it, the office building is included in the definition of shopping center, and the text of the lease, fair or unfair, says that the landlord can pass through all of the expenses for the shopping center.
Well, does it say for the shopping center, or does it say for management of the shopping center?
It says all, it's paragraph 8, and it says all of the expenses for the management and operation of the shopping center.
Well, if that's the case, then what's the point of Max?
I'm looking at 8B, all costs, expenses, and disbursements to own, manage, operate, and maintain the shopping center.
Okay, but here's what I just don't understand as a matter of common sense. Why should Max Pizza have its utilities separately metered and pay its utilities and then pay a pro rata share of somebody else's utilities that aren't separately metered, which apparently is the landlord's position?
That's the way the building is structured, and that's the way the lease is structured. I mean, that tenant, a retail tenant, pays a different rate than the office tenant and the theater tenant. And if that tenant did not like the language in the lease that allows the landlord to pass through all those expenses, they shouldn't have stayed there, and they shouldn't have renewed the lease when they renewed it after they knew what all these things were. But Your Honor, with all due respect, those were the issues on the last appeal. Those are not the issues on this appeal, okay? And I will completely and totally acknowledge that this is a, I don't want to say a harsh provision, but this is a very one-sided provision in favor of the landlord. There's no doubt about it, but that's exactly what it says. And whether in the greater scheme of things that's fair or equitable, that's what the lease says. And I think you can certainly look at that. And the other thing I want to make sure that we understand is shopping center is defined in the lease as the office building and the retail. And if you look in the back of the lease, there's a site plan, a schematic, and you'll see that the office building is in the middle, and then there's two retail wings that are part of, it's really sort of the same building, and the office building I think is three stories tall or two stories tall, I guess I can't remember. So really the office and the retail is one building, then there's a separate theater building. Now the theater building, prior to the time my client became the owner of this whole shopping center, the theater building and the other building, which housed the retail and the office, were owned by two separate people. They were not owned by the same people, and my client actually bought the theater building like 4 months later from when my client bought the office retail building. So in terms of how far back you should go in terms of pro rata share, the reason that you don't go back prior to 1997, the reason that the panel previously, in what I think is the law of the case, did not change the pro rata shares prior to 1997 was the two properties were owned by different people. My client didn't become the owner of both the theater and the office retail building until 1997. So in addition to the fact that that's, in my opinion, that's the law of the case, this Court of Appeals has already ruled on that, as a factual matter, and again, that argument's been made since 2000, and the Court of Appeals saw what the argument was and disagreed with it. Just one more comment before I forget. If you look at paragraph 42 of the lease, paragraph 42 says that the shopping center can be added to by the landlord by addition the addition of adjoining or adjacent properties. That's exactly what my client did. My client bought the theater building, added that in, that became part of the shopping center. Now, one of the things that's ironic to me, or hypocritical, I guess, on the part of the tenant's argument, is the tenant wanted the court, and even today, you know, 11 years later, wants people to think that the tenant should not be billed for the entire shopping center, should not be billed for the office building, should not be billed at all for the theater building, because that's unfair, a point you've touched upon. And yet, they want 100% of the square footage of all three of those components, the office, the retail, and the theater, to be included in determining their pro rata share. So naturally, if you have bigger square footage, because you're including the office and the theater, it's going to reduce the pro rata share of this particular tenant. And the numbers go from 3.7% approximately down to 2.6%. So at the same time that the tenant, which is not insignificant, I mean, I'm not trying to minimize it, but at the same time that the tenant says, you can't charge me for those office and theater expenses, the tenant also wants you to include the space, the square footage of the office and the office and the theater in determining pro rata share. And that's just not proper.
Counsel, let me ask you a question. How do you respond to your colleague's argument that the trial court's order, which is framed in terms of what costs are reasonable, finding essentially doesn't address the inquiry of whether the costs were directly related to the management and operation of the shopping center?
Well, the way I view it, and it is perhaps not the best word, the Court of Appeals basically took away the biggest issue in the case presented by the tenant, which was, you can only charge me for the common area maintenance expenses, and I need to look at all the documents to find out what are common area maintenance expenses. That argument fully, completely, and totally was taken away when it went back down after the prior appeal. And I think that's why the decision was different by the trial court, because the issues were totally different. And there was no longer any kind of question about whether an audit was correct, whether an audit was incorrect, what kind of expenses were proper, what kind of expenses were not proper.
Under your interpretation of the lease, what expenses by the landlord would not be chargeable to Max Pizza on a pro rata basis?
Well, certainly if a retail tenant had their own meter and they were paying their own utility, that would not be a cost or expense of the landlord that could be passed through.
Okay, but that's not money the landlord spends. My question to you is, under your interpretation of the lease, give me an example of any money that the landlord spends that isn't chargeable back to Max Pizza on a pro rata basis.
Under the exact language of the lease, probably very little. Maybe if I was hired to evict a tenant, the legal fees would not be.
A part of managing a shopping center?
Absolutely.
Okay, so basically you're saying Max Pizza is stuck for every dollar the landlord spends.
That's what the lease says, Your Honor, and I'm not saying that was fair. I'm not saying that's equitable. But yeah, capital expenses, absolutely, that would be included in there. The cost of the mortgage would probably be included in the definition of operating expenses, because it says all expenses to own, manage, you know, and maintain the center. So I think the answer to your question is probably nothing. But to get back to your question, the Court of Appeals basically said, no distinction between common area and non-common area. But if you find, trial court, upon remand, that the bills were improper, that the bills were, like, there was a $10,000 snow removal bill one year, and if the trial court would have found that that bill wasn't really paid or some other reason, then the bill, that expense should not be charged through to the tenant. And I think what the trial court was saying by reasonable was, I don't find anything improper about any of these charges. That's what they were saying. And it probably wasn't the best use of language. They probably should have said there was nothing wrong or improper. And just a couple of comments on that. There was no evidence that any of the charges were improper, inflated, bogus, you know, paid to a relative of the landlord or anything like that. And even the tenant's primary witness said that she had no evidence or information whatsoever that the charges were not, you know, legitimate charges. Her complaint for all these years has been they're not CAM charges. They're not related to common area maintenance.
One follow-up question. It seems that from this record that the court first calculates the amount of damages as $2,389, but then in its written order awards damages in the amount of $2,298.35. Do you agree that there's an error there? Do we need to remand for a clarification on that point, or do you concede that the higher amount of damages?
In lieu of remand, we'll go with the bigger number. No problem. Okay. I didn't even notice that. I did not even notice that, to be honest, Your Honor. So I will stipulate on behalf of my client to the larger number there between those two. I mean, there's absolutely no reason for a remand to occur over that kind of dollar value. Absolutely, and I didn't even notice that. So there, and the rest of the award is interest and some costs, and we're not fighting about that at all. What I find it interesting that you all seem to be very interested in the underlying issues in the case. I think those underlying issues really were interesting, but I think those issues are really all resolved at the last appeal. I think the primary thing that I understood the tenant to be raising here was the suggestion that the trial court had to give some reason for changing their factual conclusions when they didn't have any different evidence after the appeal. That's the essence of certainly the opening brief in this case. And as I indicated in my brief, I think there are reasons why the trial court came up with different conclusions based on the same facts. It was a whole different analysis. And, you know, you didn't have to look at CAM charges. The issue of an audit was totally different. And more importantly for our purposes here, I don't think that a trial court has any duty or obligation to state in its opinion why its decision today is different than it was last time. That's not their duty. Their duty in the review you have to make is the conclusions that they did make, that the trial court did make after it was remanded. Are those factual conclusions supported by evidence? And, you know, there's 3,000 pages of documents that were produced. There's 800 pages approximately of invoices, ledgers, checks. I mean, we produced enormous amounts of documents to the tenant, both prior to trial in the discovery phase and at the trial. And what the trial court said, given the interpretation of the lease handed down by the Court of Appeals, is there's nothing wrong with these charges. And the court did not find that there was anything wrong with them. And so, except for this one issue of the pro rata share, which we essentially conceded by the time we got to the appeal. Thank you.
Looks like I've got just 1 minute. Two very quick things. In response to the appellee's argument that the audit issue now is not relevant, it's just as relevant whether you're trying to ferret out CAM versus non-CAM or proper cost versus non-proper cost. That's why I started out pointing out to the court the factual finding by the trial court that the defendant had breached the audit provision by failing to meaningfully produce documents. Again, it's not quantity, it's quality of documentation. And that's why it is also and was important that we had the adverse inference, which just vanished for seemingly no reason at all. The second issue I want to address, and that is this. The reason, in addition to going back to 1994, for the reasons I've stated and which are addressed in the brief,
It also impacts when the wrongful withholding first occurred for purposes of calculating prejudgment interest. Thank you, Your Honors. Appreciate your time.
We appreciate the arguments of both counsel. The case stands submitted. Counsel are excused. We will issue a rule, and our last case can set up as soon as the tables are cleared. Thank you.